This is CBS Eye on the World, the New World Report with Joseph Umar, the Executive Director of Secure Free Society. And we're very pleased to welcome a special guest, Mauricio Clavacarone, former president of the IDB. The IDB is an acronym that stands for the Inter-American Development Bank. And Mauricio headed the bank from 2020 till 2022, till recently. So before we investigate the surprises and twists and turns of his time in office, and we'll ask what the IDB does, because it's a part of the whole of the New World Development, 30% owned by the U.S., and very, very much involved in the development of the region, Latin America, especially since the crisis of the pandemic. Mauricio, Mr. President, Mr. Former President, a very good evening to you. Thank you very much. What is the mission of the IDB when you took command in 2020? Good evening to you.
Well, thank you so much, Sean. Thank you for the opportunity. And well, one thing is what the mission of the bank was when I took over in 2020 and what it was supposed to be. In 1959, when it was founded by President Eisenhower and by then President Kubitschek, the mission was supposed to be to support development throughout Latin America and the Caribbean, precisely as a result of the Cuban Revolution, to prevent the kind of the growth of communism in Latin America and the Caribbean. So it was kind of created kind of with a theme of fighting or preventing the spread of communism after the Cuban Revolution. Then by the time I got there in 2020, ironically, it was a bank that was almost completely taken over by China and Chinese interests and had become the steward for Chinese infrastructure projects throughout Latin America and the Caribbean, despite the 30% shareholder. And I think that part of the United States, and I think that the reason for that was because the United States kind of lessened throughout the years its interest, and eventually the large shareholders of the region, namely Argentina, Mexico, and Brazil, all of the worst practices of Latin America and the Caribbean got imported into the bank. The United States kind of stepped aside in its role despite the 30% shareholding, and it became a real reflection of the region, which is when China saw in 2010 the great opportunity to come in and have it become its big steward throughout the region. And that's exactly what happened and how they coerced their way through.
Joseph, you have a question for Mauricio.
I do. Mauricio, you mentioned China, and I think it's a well-known data point at this point that China's influence in Latin America has grown considerably over the last 20 years. But many people maybe don't know about China's influence at the IDB. Can you take us back? How far does that influence go? What is the origin? What is the source of it? Can you take us back to that?
Yeah, so the Inter-American Development Bank was probably the worst run international financial institution over the last 20 years. And therefore, as a result, during the financial crisis in 2008-2009, it was exposed, and I believe it's a multilateral development bank, was exposed to subprimes. And as such, was almost $1 billion in the red. The United States at the time, obviously we had our own issues, did not want to capitalize the bank because obviously we had other priorities. And China saw a golden opportunity. So they came in and they're the only one of the 48 shareholders, which are countries, one of the 48 countries that paid what was called, quote unquote, an admission fee to come in with a very small shareholding, but to get their foot in the door. That admission fee was about $500 million. I like to call it an institutional kickback, because frankly, that's what it was. Because at the end of the day, what they bought themselves was the bank to literally walk them throughout the region. And that was the beginning. And if you look at the rise of Chinese investment in infrastructure projects throughout the region, which now we're also familiar with, it was done with the support of the IDB. So it is not an exaggeration to say that Chinese growth in infrastructure investment and strategic investments throughout Latin America and the Caribbean was most of the big projects were all co-financed by the IDB, of which the United States is a 30% shareholder. Therefore, we, the United States, over the last 10 years, ended up co-financing most of the Chinese projects in the region. Fact.
Mauricio, you became the president October 1st, 2020. And in September of 2022, the board voted for you to leave that office, to leave IDB. I followed your efforts at IDB through Mary Anastasia O'Grady, the America's columnist at the Wall Street Journal. And my audience is very familiar with this story. Mary O'Grady's written about it at least twice to my memory. So I follow her column now for your comment. I learned from Mary O'Grady that an anonymous note, email, came to the board sometime in the spring, winter spring of 2022, with allegations that were not substantiated by any fact. You and a colleague of yours denied the allegations. The board brought on a law firm to investigate. And the law firm's report to the board then led to the U.S. Treasury voting for your exit, the U.S. Treasury right now. The U.S. Treasury, which is unusual, but you'll explain, said that they found misconduct that violated the Inter-American Development Bank's, bank's principles and values, said nothing about conduct or ethics. When Mario Grady inquired of Treasury, the U.S. Treasury Department, about the facts of the matter, the Treasury response was, it's confidential. So I don't ask you to relitigate it. I just ask you to comment on this highly unusual circumstance of a president with a five-year term being asked to leave or forced to leave because of an anonymous note that, so far as I can tell, as a reader of The Wall Street Journal, has no facts to it. Can you comment, Mauricio?
Yeah. Well, first and foremost, if you look at the resolution that the board of directors sent to the governors and the resolution that the governors then sent to remove me from office, it was without cause. So the reason why they talk about principles and values, which they can't define, and the reason why everything is confidential to them is first and foremost because there was no rules that were broken. As a matter of fact, my attorneys was they were able to substantiate over a dozen rules that the bank violated against me, but not a single one in the report shows that I violated the rules of the bank. So this was all a political cover in order to remove me without cause, which they could have done under my contract, but they chose to defame me instead. Now, let's be clear. When I ran for president of the IDB in September 2020, the Biden campaign at the time essentially ran against me. They went out there full steam ahead and lobbied the region to try to not get me elected, not get a fellow American elected. So at the end of the day, removing me from the IDB was almost a campaign promise of the Biden administration. They thought this was their great opportunity, and they did so. Now, in doing so, by the way, I think there's another blatant conflict of interest, is that the law firm that was hired was the law firm where Treasury's general counsel had just come from and had just been confirmed from 2 months before. And at the end of the day, those lawyers were his pupils and fellow co-partners of his practice at the time, which is something that was Davis Polk, which is something that I had been at Treasury. We would never have done with our former Treasury general counsel as a matter of optics. And there's plenty of firms that could have done the investigation, not the one where he just came from 2 months before. That stinks of a conflict of interest. But let me just go one step beyond that. One of the things that I did when I first came into the bank was shut down all of those Chinese co-financing mechanisms at the bank. I brought Taiwan into the bank for the first time in order to actually do co-financing projects. Like, I was literally being threatened by Chinese officials at the bank, obviously by the big countries that had ruled the bank for 60 years, Argentina, Brazil, and Mexico, whose power diminished at the bank in that regards. And literally then the Biden administration, which had its political short-sightedness, was also against me. So I was really all alone trying to deal with this with no backing, but yet focusing on issues that should interest us all. Nearshoring, everything that we're doing in that regards, obviously trying to maintain the integrity of institutions, democracy in Latin America and the Caribbean. But yet that was not cared enough about. What the Biden administration unfortunately chose to do was to join hands with China, which, by the way, was the first country to vote me out. So in the order, they were the first ones to literally follow China in its effort, which it already tried last year. So the big winner here today is going to be now a bank. And by the way, it's not a surprise that the anonymous letter came in the day before we had introduced historic reforms to the bank that were approved by the Board of Governors, historic reforms to the bank that would have equilibrated and minimized the power that the big countries have had, unfortunately, Argentina, Brazil, and Mexico, which frankly shouldn't need a development bank at this point, to bring more power to the smaller countries in the region, which are 19 out of the 26, to change the governance of the bank so that in our private sector arm, China, which had overtaken, it had become the largest non-regional shareholder, to bring down its role, to increase the role of the United States, to increase the role of Japan, to increase the role of Spain. All of that now is history, because the next day, an anonymous letter came in targeting me to defame me. The United States, along with China, played right along with it. And now none of that's going to change. We're going to see more of the same cronyism and corruption from the Inter-American Development Bank.
Once upon a time, Gore Vidal taught me, Mauricio, never say it's a conspiracy when the word coincidence will do. So we'll say that it was a coincidence. We're speaking to Mauricio Clavercaron, former president of the IDB, the Inter-American Development Bank. Joseph Umar, Executive Director of Secure Free Society. This is the New World Report. And when we come back, what works needs to be done at the IDB for a hemisphere recovering from the pandemic and dealing with worldwide inflation? I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.